Hashtag buy diverse is their mantra and should be yours too. The Chicago Minority Supplier Development Council connects Asian, Black, Hispanic, and Native American-owned businesses with corporations and government municipalities that seek services. Partner with them today at buydiverse.net.
Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN. So Rock and Roll Hall of Famers Cheap Trick are responsible for many of rock's great anthems. Dream Police, I Want You to Want Me, Surrender, Southern Girls, The Flame, and countless others. For nearly 50 years, Rick Nielsen and Cheap Trick have been a force in the music industry. The Illinois-based Rockards put out their self-titled debut in 1977 and recently released their 20th album, a 13-track album called In Another World. The album features longtime vocalist Robin Zander, bassist Tom Peterson, as well as Nielsen's son Dax on the drums. It also includes a cover of John Lennon's Gimme Some Truth. And joining us to talk about his incredible journey in music is once again rock legend Rick Nielsen. What's going on, Rick?
Hey, how you doing, Dave?
I am outstanding. I want to jump in with this new album. We just opened this half hour with Another World, and like most of your albums, you know, there's never a conscious effort to build a new album. It all comes out of recording and playing together, and then boom, this album happens.
Yeah, well, it that's the way we do it.
Right.
One song at a time, and we like making albums as opposed to, you know, making a single and then nine other tracks that aren't as good. When people have more patience, and it's not just all wham bam thank you ma'am rushing through things and, you know, thinking they hear the whole song if they hear the first 3 seconds of it. You know, it's like, I like albums that, like, when you get to the last track, you feel like starting over at the first track again.
Right. Well, that's always how you've done your albums. I mean, it's really just playing, writing one at a time. In fact, there's a bunch of songs that didn't even make it on this album, because once you guys get going, I mean, it just becomes nonstop.
Yeah, it's true. It's like we added 2 tracks that we didn't think we were going to do, and we actually did a slow version of one, and then when the producer went out of the room for 3 minutes, we did a fast version of it, and that made it to the record too. So it's like, you know, we love to record, we love writing songs, and love playing. So it's like, that's what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted me to clean up your yard or something like that, I'm not very good at it.
Okay, fair enough. But during my own yard. Well, I was going to say during the shutdowns and the pandemic, that's probably the only time in your life, in your career, that you were probably at home. You know, a lot of this time,
and it was probably. I know. It's true. It's true. It's like it was. I like being on the road.
Yeah.
You know, but I like being off too. I mean, it's just, I'm never bored anyhow, so it's like,
right.
I can entertain myself.
Sure. You used to write just about every song yourself, but now everyone kind of jumps in a little bit when it comes to new music, right?
Yes. And it was, everybody has ideas. And it's like, you know, I used to write it all, and I used to do it all, and it was like, that's all right, but it's like, you know, it's like, you know, I don't like to compare myself to it, but like the Beatles, you know, it's like, did George have some, you know, it's like, he didn't come out until the Beatles were basically done,
right,
before we knew that he was, you know, what he could do. And it's tough. I mean, you've got main writers who, Aerosmith and Rolling Stones. I mean, so, hey, what did this guy in the Stones do? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all Nankerfeld or, you know, Richard Jagger. You know, it's like, and so it was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, it's like, it's easier to keep songs that aren't of the caliber that we think we would like off a record if we share it.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, you know? No, I like that. I like that thought process. Now, I know a favorite technique of yours in songwriting that is just obvious in so much of what you've written is using double and triple entendres. You know, Surrender might be the perfect example of all that.
Yeah, well, and the lyrics in that song, too. It's like, it's half true and half part of my life.
Right.
So it's like, and that's, is that true or what? You know, it's like, the characters in the thing were, I mentioned about, mommy was a whack in the Philippines. Well, my mother wasn't, but my aunt was.
Ah, gotcha.
And why do you need to go through and try to explain? It's hard enough to explain anyhow.
Right.
And so it's like, you just leave it as is. And Indonesian junk, you know, what does that mean?
Right.
That mean the ship, or that mean heroin, or does that mean,
right,
you know, what?
Or, makes you
or
think.
It just sounds good. Yeah, or is it because there's a band in Milwaukee called Indonesian Junk? You know?
I like that. Yeah, it does make you think.
Weren't around then.
Yeah, it makes you think. You came from a musical family, but both your folks, I think, were opera singers, weren't they?
They were opera singers, and my father, he had a radio show at a competing station, WMBI,
yep,
and mm-hmm. in Chicago, and both my grandfathers were graduates of Moody Bible Institute, and my dad sang with Billy Graham for a while.
Wow!
And he owned a music store. You know, it's like, yeah. But I was, his music was never what I was into, but I was surrounded by music.
Yeah. Absolutely. And your dad was a pilot, too. So as a kid, not only were you playing music and listening to music, but you were traveling all over the place.
Yeah, I was in, I think, 48 states, Mexico and Canada.
Wow!
By the time I was about 14 years old, you know, just from tagging along. And so, you know, going on the road is something that I've done for my whole life, basically.
Yeah. Your folks also ran a music store when you were a kid. So, I mean, you had access to a lot of these artists,
yeah.
Right?
Well, sort of. To those artists, no, I had to discover most of it on my own because the music store, I was from Elmhurst,
mm-hmm.
and we moved when I was 8 years old to Rockford, and my parents bought the music store that was in business then. It was called American Beauty Music.
Wow.
And the people that owned it, I don't know why. I don't never heard all this whole story, but you know, they were interested in selling the store. And my uncle was living in Rockford, and he was one of the first guys involved with Muzak.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, and so he told my dad, you know, Ralph, instead of, you know, singing for your supper and, you know, being a choir director and all this and that stuff, there's a music store. And so my dad didn't know any better, and it sounded appealing, and there we moved to Rockford.
Wow. Wow. And you're so well known, you know, Rick, for all your guitars and being a guitarist, but high school came around and you're playing in various bands, but as a drummer.
Yeah, I started off as a drummer, and actually in seventh grade, I was first year on drums and flute in junior high school, first chair. But I said to my band director, because I knew a good note from a bad note, you know, imagine mm-hmm. seventh grade band, it was mostly bad notes. And I
right.
went up to the band director and I said, Mr. Bischel, you're an incompetent, drunken fool who doesn't deserve to teach music to me or anybody else. Oh,
yeah, hello.
That was it. I was expelled, and
oh.
I was banned from band. I was banned from the Rockford school system music program for life.
Oh my God.
And my parents were thrilled. You know?
And look, you showed him, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, in a way,
right.
You know, you know, 40 years later, the junior high school that I went to, they reopened the library that was built during the Depression, and it had a stained glass on top, and they had three alumni come and speak to the class, or whatever. And it was like, it was John B. Anderson, who ran for president, mm-hmm. from Rockford, went to Lincoln, Dr. Timothy Johnson, who was the ABC TV doctor, you know, that was on, like, mm-hmm. whenever they needed a doctor.
Yeah, sure.
And
mm-hmm.
me.
Wow.
And me.
Wow.
And I said, what do you have me here for? Levity? You know, because...
no, not at all.
yeah, well, you know, I was sort of well-known by that time. It's like, and the principal, who was ancient when I went there...
Still there.
Still got up and gave us a little speech. And I went over to him, I said, Mr. Hulick. I didn't say, gee, I thought you were old then. I looked at him and said, yeah, you left out a few people that, you know, because he was saying nice stuff about some of the people he worked with. And he said to me, he says, Rick, you were right.
Ah, how did that feel? How did that feel,
well,
Rick?
Well, my parents had both passed away.
Oh, no.
And so I tell people that, that was the last time I told the truth. I got in trouble for it. Yeah.
That's great. How does that? That must have felt great. That must have felt.
Oh, it did.
Awesome.
Who do I tell it to? I'm telling it to you.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Well, I mean, then from there, I mean, though, that, you know, you and Tom got your first record deal in the '60s, the Grim Reapers and Fuse. And I love that
we were on McClurg Court.
CBS. I know that. The old barn.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Yeah. I didn't know there was a recording studio in there.
Yeah, we were there on McClurg Court, and we recorded with Jackie Mills,
wow.
the producer, and our first record came out and went didn't go very far.
No, but I mean, you know, and it was a few years later. It was '77 that, you know, you guys were playing as Cheap Trick, you know, 250, you know, one nighters a year, opening for Kiss, The Kinks, Santana, Boston. And, you know, then you guys finally put out that first album. Did that first album, when it came out, is that when you felt like you guys were something and you were on your way? Or was it really the next album? What was it for you?
Well, I think we always felt like we were on our way. You know, it's like we didn't know where. And it's like, you know, we felt good about ourselves. If somebody gave us a bad review or didn't like our band... We thought that was cool.
Yeah.
you know, we're musicians. We're supposed to be poor and we're supposed to have no success.
Yeah.
And it's like, but we believed in ourselves. And so, you know, we used to get fired. Well, we didn't get fired a lot, but we got fired a few times because we lied just to get the job. We said that, you know, yeah, we play all top 40 and then we go over there and play. We didn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like one place I remember we got fired in Lake Geneva after the first night. And they said, you know, we wanted to hear top 40. You were playing all this other junk. So, okay. So we took that as a badge of courage.
Yeah.
Later we were, you know, later we were the house band at the place called the Black Knight. We played there all the time, you know, five sets a night,
wow.
7 days a week. And, you know, it's like we always thought we were good. You know, it's like so telling Rick, you're ugly and you're not talented. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what?
yeah. Gotcha.
I didn't take it. That's not a bad. That was nothing bad.
Yeah. No. Not at all. Not at all. But you know.
Still isn't.
No. But you know what's funny is you guys. You know, you put on Color and Heaven Tonight. You know, and that kind of gave you that international acclaim, but not quite in the U.S. It was the Japanese press that really, like, threw you out there. Like, seriously. When you did, you know, that live album, it was one of the greatest live albums of all time.
Well, you know, you've mentioned some of the bands that we opened for. Well, in 1977, before our first album came out, we did the two opening shows on the Queen tour. And it was in Milwaukee and it was in Madison. And Thin Lizzy was supposed to be there. But they, you know, they were late, or I don't know what the deal was. I was happy we got it. The Japanese press were there to see Queen, you know, because they were huge in Japan. And we played, and they happened to like us, which is odd, you know, for an opening band, you know, playing for the headliners. But they liked us so much where they asked if I would write an article. What's it like touring with Tween? You know, it's like, well,
oh, that's cool.
I didn't really know, but okay, I'm crazy enough to do it. And so we did it, and soon after that, we started getting fan mail, and in the Japanese magazines, there'd be caricatures of ourselves. We're getting fan mail from people we didn't know. Wow. And the record, two songs became a hit in Japan. Clock Strikes 10 was number one, which that was from our second album. And, you know, and then right after that, then we toured with Kiss, and the same thing. The press was there from Japan to see Kiss, but they liked us. And we got more fan mail before you know it. Now, that was 77, so then we had those couple of hits, and then now we had asked to go to Japan in 78, and we sold all these shows out. You know, two shows at Budokan, sure. It's like, we thought they were the smartest people on earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they liked us, and we were doing well.
Yeah.
And it was the same belief we had in ourselves, you know, playing at the Black Knight in Lake Geneva, or wherever we played, or at the Night Gallery in Waukegan. I mean, we played there. We played the graveyard shift there, too.
But I like what you're saying. Like, you all, you know, it wasn't something that, you know, gave you the confidence. You and the band always had confidence in yourself. There was just certain points in time that, you know, whether, you know, it was an album that came out or a concert or whatnot that just threw you into larger critical fame. But you always had that confidence.
Yeah, we did. You know, it's like, you know, we know it's... Not a lot of people have confidence, you know, but you know, and a lot of to do with luck too. But you know, we always felt that we were treated. I treat people better than they deserve, and I thought we were always treated not like we deserve, but I always felt like we were something, even if we're playing for nobody in the audience.
Yeah,
yeah. But think of all the people that are missing this.
Yeah, right. Think about that. Absolutely. We're talking to rock legend Rick Nielsen of Cheap Trick, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN.
Mommy's all right. Daddy's all right. They just seem a little weird. Surrender. Surrender. But don't give yourself away.
Day Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to rock legend Rick Nielsen of Cheap Trick. Their new album is called In Another World. You have paired up and toured. We were talking about some of the bands with so many other rock legends. What are some of the standouts that you really enjoyed, you know, touring with?
Well, we did a lot of shows when we were both about the same level of a draw with AC/DC.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great, and we loved playing with them. So one night they'd be headlining, next night we'd be headlining, and we just got along well. I mean, when we did a show a bit later, we played the 4th of July with Steve Dahl and Teenage Radiation.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
AC/DC and the Babies, I think it was, and we had 40,000 people.
Wow.
It's Pecatonica Fairgrounds. It was. It's outside of Rockford. And the day before, I had just purchased a house. I hadn't even moved in. I was still living in an apartment in Rockford. And I took Angus and Malcolm and Cliff.
Wow.
Came to my house. And then we took them over to my new place and drove around. Just showed them, you know, like, okay, look at a house. But we got along well enough where it was kind of cool.
You just hung out, yeah.
And then I actually took Bon Scott to a Mexican restaurant. He'd never had Mexican food before. And then fast forward to the last tour that Malcolm did before he quit and then before he died. I went to Nashville with a friend of mine, and we flew down there for the last show of the tour, and there was they weren't letting anybody, all you know, all the locals or country celebs that wanted to see AC/DC and all this stuff, they weren't letting anybody in. They let me in, and I was the only one to walk in the dressing room and says, "Hey, Rick, you still living in Rockford?"
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Like, you know, it was just like, we hadn't missed a beat, you know.
Well, the new album is In Another World, available now. And for more on Cheap Trick and upcoming concerts, tours, hopefully soon, easy enough, it's cheaptrick.com. Rick, always a pleasure hanging out and chatting with you. And I really do hope to see you live and in person soon.
I hope so too, Dave.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you. All right, top stories from WGN.
WGN.
Top stories for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom are next on 720 WGN.